July 4th, 2020. July 4th is a complicated day in a complicated country at a visceral moment. It is also a clarifying day this year in 2020. It's a day where we need to look with clarity about where we are as a country, where we could go, and where we in common power must help us to go, must be determined to go. This is a three things podcast episode. Good morning with David and Charles. I'm out for my walk this morning. Charles is coming in. He's just waking up. It's like 3 p.m. He's just waking up. That's not true. It's only 9:15. That's pretty early for him. You're up?
I was up last night fixing the website.
Okay, good. Oh, good.
While you were laying on your deck in a blanket.
That's great. That's great. I want you to know that I had a – so our dog gets really upset on the – like around 4th of July because of the fireworks.
Oh, that's right. Right.
So he was had a really bad night last night. So I was constantly like dozing on and off. That's all I did last night. No big deal there. But when you do doze on and off, my experience is I wake up in the middle of dreams all the time because you're only like sleeping for like an hour or something. So I woke up in the middle of a dream. I was at WeWork, our office location. Okay. And
you spent a lot of time thinking about that yesterday, man.
I know this is – well, that's where Lisa quickly deconstructed it for me afterwards. She's like, well, you talked to Charles about the office and then – so in the dream, though, I was at WeWork and I didn't think anybody was going to be there because that's what I've seen – that's what I saw in the background when Maria was on Zoom the other day. So I went there and I didn't have my mask. That was bad on me. Didn't have my mask. And I went in and there was a birthday party going on. So again, it's like a birthday party, okay? And it wasn't ours, but it was packed. And you couldn't even walk through the room. It was so crowded. Nobody had their mask on. And I was trying to like go around everybody. And then people started hugging me.
It's a nightmare. That's a COVID nightmare.
It is. I know. And I had this book. I had like a really big book. I don't know. Like it was like an oversized book. And I held up the book to try to block people from hugging me. I need to stop.
You need to process that. You need to. That's also your fear of like interpersonal engagement, like manifested through COVID and like getting this disease, the disease of too much human connection.
Well, walking into a room where like, well, this is the weirdest thing. Like the presents, it was like a Christmas present room with like so many presents all over the place, and I had to climb over them.
Okay. We're supposed to talk about July 4th and some other stuff. But now we're going to. So tell me, how did it make you feel, David? How did it make you? No, don't.
All right. So we haven't done a Three Things podcast in a while. We've been busy with all kinds of things for our organization. Mm-hmm. And it's July 4th. And I thought it'd be useful for us to talk a little bit about you and me to talk a little bit about July 4th and how we experience it and how we've come to think about it and then to connect it to our big name announcement, which we changed our name to Common Power. And we had our big birthday celebration on Tuesday this past week. And then I want to talk about Trump's speech last night, which was tied to July 4th and everything. So he's at Mount Rushmore in South Dakota.
Yeah, this is really, I'm glad that we're talking about that, because I refuse to digest Trump directly. So I need to, I need to ask you about it, because I didn't watch it. And I read some stuff about
Sure.
Hey, have we talked about our name on the podcast yet? Like about the
what we, why we, and all that stuff? I don't think, you know what we did is we did a podcast where we kind of said we were going to change it. We didn't talk about what the name was, but we said we were. And we gave a little bit of rationale into why that was. Then.
Okay. And then you posted the audio
from the event. Right. No, yeah, we didn't post the audio from our birthday party this past week. We posted the audio from our CP-wide announcement when we did a Zoom call announcing it about 2 weeks ago.
Got it.
When we announced the name change. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So, well, why don't we start there, actually? Why don't we start with the name? The name, the new name, of course, is Common Power. And how are you feeling about it now, 5 days into us, since we announced it on the birthday party on the 30th? It's actually, I guess, 4 days since the July 1st was the official day.
I love it even more. I love it even more because of how people have responded to it. How they've embraced it. Common Power has always been this name in the back of my pocket. Common Power was the name that I was going to use if I had to separate from you. If I had to go rogue, you and your moderate. Your moderate left values.
Right. Well, it's okay because your spouse would have come with me, but that's cool. Okay. So
she actually is more moderate. You're right. Yeah. So that's totally fine. That might have been.
And my spouse would have gone with you. My wife would have gone with you though. So we're, yeah.
That's right. It would have balanced out. We have totally balanced out.
Yeah.
But I've always loved it. I've always loved it. But it's been. I feel better about it because of how other folks feel about it. Like I do. Like I care. I have my own perspective, and then I also care a lot about what the people around me think and what the community I care about thinks. Having people layer in their own lived experiences as to why they like the name, they've made it their own. And it just feels really right.
You said you've had it for a while, and I know you have in terms of thinking about it as a name, because you always been of the mind that, we're probably going to have to change our name because of the UK organization. And so you have been thinking about this with greater depth than I have for a while. Why did you, way back when you first thought of it, come up, what led you to this terminology? I understand where we're at now in terms of our reasoning and kind of the way we've thought about it and convinced ourselves and the way we feel about it. But why at the beginning did you come up with that? Where'd it come from?
It came from the word power initially being attached historically to the Black Power movement. And the significance of that, like that for people who work in organizing or activism, the Black Panther Party and the Black Power movement is like the poster you have on your wall. It's one of the reasons why Black Panther, the movie, resonated so well with people my age, because the Black Panther Party are kind of idolized, not just for their revolutionary rhetoric, but their style. It's not just that we're fighting the system, but we look so damn good while we do it, right? Like that was the key thing with them. And so that kind of the fight plus the style is something that really resonated with me, and it has for a long time. So I always told myself that secretly CP Next was really Common Power Next and not Common Purpose uh-huh. Next behind the scenes. But, you know, I kind of just put that in the back burner for a little while. But we also needed, you know, in a very like tactical way, we needed to have it be CP still in my mind.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I have come to really appreciate the little mental pivot, the shift from like, and I was, you and I yesterday were talking through some different terminologies for kind of how we're referring to our field work. But I was working through kind of the from purpose to power. All right. From purpose to power. And that's really to me the core rationale for creating an organization and for hiring the people that we are building and for partnering with local organizations. All of those things, organization, personnel, partnerships, and our mojo, our methodology of communities, are all like they're the middle of that sandwich between the top and the bottom. And the top is like this mindset, this goal to do something different, to make a difference in civic life. And then the mobilization is the on the groundwork. And you can go, as we've talked many times, from mindset to mobilization without going through our methodology, through us, right? You totally can. Mm-hmm. But for us to create an organization, to have the mojo we have, to work with partners, to me, it's about power. It's about trying to build common power, and that kind of clarity of sense of the what we've built, what's in that middle of what we built is about the pursuit of common power, is really been clarifying for me to understand of like, you can go around us, and there's lots of other ways to do it elsewhere, and go right ahead. You can have the purpose, but if you want to work towards mm-hmm. common power, then we need to go together. Mm-hmm.
Well, and if you want to work towards common power, so you know, in my explanation was about like my initial thought of it. Now I see power. You know, power. The word power looks really, really different. You know, when we talk about whether or not a law gets passed in Congress, we talk about real power, control of the House, control of the Senate, the power to pass legislation, the power to stop legislation, the power to stop judges from being approved, the power to block Trump. Like that is what we're fighting for. That's the real thing that we realize that I think more people understand is that you need a majority in the Senate. You don't need your favorite people to be elected. You need to win and you need to have power in the halls of Congress, the halls of justice, in order for those things to actually function in the way that we think they should. So it is much bigger than just power for a certain type of people. It is common power. It is power for all of us. It is the most common power, which is the vote. And it is the quest to have that be available for everybody.
Yeah, the word common has been a point of really great feedback from people in the CP community, right? Because we started out and we thought, well, purpose, you know, it's a catalyzing word, and it's connected us. And so if there's going to be some questioning and doubt, it'll be around power. And, you know, a few people have raised questions about power, but there's been much more kind of discussion around the way common modifies power. And to me, it does really create this almost, what's the two words when they're back to back and they kind of run in tension with one another. they oxymoron. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're like the way that we think about the latter word, power, has been in America. In America, an individualized notion. Okay, and the ability to have common power is really like mind blowing, right? And and to me, that's really what we are trying to do. We're really trying to do that with the people who are part of our work, with the partner orgs around the country, with all Americans. It's common power, and that's radical. That's really quite radical.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with the organization. It starts with the way that we run our team. You know, so we have young, diverse leaders, but they're not trophies. They're not just there to make the website look good. They actually run significant parts of the organization. They're at the forefront. They own whole pieces of it. And the power within CP alone has been distributed in ways that are more reflective of where we want to see this country.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We started here.
We sure did. We did.
You started here. I mean, as much as you don't like to wear the founder hat, the only reason why I'm here is because I believed you when you said, I actually want to share some of this power that I have. I have gained a following in Seattle because of my lectures. People trusted me in politics. I'm building this organization and you could have just been like the guy. Like so many other organizations in this city even that are in this lane, you could have been, and I won't name them, but I think folks can think of the people who started things and they kept control of those organizations, and they were the only people, they were the only individuals that people think of when they think of these organizations. You didn't do that. So, you know, this isn't the David Domke Foundation.
Yeah, no, yeah, I appreciate that. And I also paradigmatically, like, as I think of like the, what this could be, like what's your, the possibility of being that, of being like a one person show, it's so counter to what I think we need as a country and anything that I want us to be. So I appreciate you taking the chance. And that's why I often, when we're doing public events, you will hear me speak most passionately about, look, if we're raising money, for example, look, the money we're raising here is so that we can hire people to take risks, to come do this work, to take that chance. And to me, like that, those risks, they are risks, but they are also just beliefs. They are beliefs that we can do this. And so to me, that's what you and I, one of the things we have at our core is like a belief that we can do this. We can frickin' do this.
Yeah, it's like a faith, actually.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's deep. It's deep. It's deep, and it goes, like, it's multifaceted, yeah.
Yeah, we spend a not insignificant amount of time talking to people, some in leadership at moments, but more often just in the general arena of people who are like, who are doubtful about all kinds of things. And we're like, no, you can do this. We can do this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's not like a blind faith. It's like, no.
Listen, no.
We have proof.
Exactly.
People out there are telling us that we're significantly impacted. Their potential to gain power in their kind of local election. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, man.
All right, let's talk about July 4th, because I think this whole thing about common power has that kind of connection to the notion of what July 4th means in America, too. So, like, what's your kind of mindset about the day? Charles Douglas, what's your kind of mindset about the day? Is today a day to celebrate America or not?
So, okay. This is, I'm glad you're couching it like this, because I had my, like, what I thought July 4th was, like, for years, like, how I felt about it in general. In general, July 4th has never been this thing where I am feeling super patriotic. It's been a day off.
Uh-huh.
It's been a family day. It's been kind of a community day. But it's never, ever been, wow, our country is so great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna celebrate it. I'm gonna remember our forefathers, et cetera, et cetera. Never, 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 never. Okay. Not even a little
bit. Yeah.
In fact, yeah. I used to not like to like wear the flag at all, because like historically what the people who have waved the flag, what they have done to my folks. So that was previous, that was before this year. This year it feels really different. This year feels really different. And maybe it's been gradual over Trump's presidency, but this year was kind of a kind of a tipping point where I think we all got to see just how much this country is operating on behalf of or for certain kinds of people and not for others. And it's blatant, right? Where before it was like you could blame it on Trump. Now it is there are people in power in states across this country that are actively not looking out for the health of the people in their states. They are actively putting them in more danger by not letting them, making voting easy. They are actively, you know, the funds that were supposed to go to relief are actively being swallowed up by these massive corporations or business interests that don't need the money. And then there are other like side agendas that are still happening, even though we're supposed to be focused on this pandemic and this election, or the racism laid bare by George Floyd's murder and the protests. This is like everyone is seeing out in the open just how much this country is broken, and we thought we'd seen it before, and now we're really seeing it. And it's July 4th this year means something totally different.
So what is that exactly? I don't feel like you finished the circle there.
Yeah. So the finish is actually this, and I'm looking down at my phone here. The finish is this. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence bequeathed by your fathers is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought light and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice. I must mourn. That's Frederick Douglass. And it's something that's been brought out every fourth in recent years, and this year it means a hell of a lot more. And it was a special thing that NPR did yesterday when it was a reading by his descendants of his speech.
Yeah,
it was shared everywhere. We posted it on social. AJ sent it to me. Our Black History specialist, and it's perfect for now. And I love that they did it the day before Independence Day, and not on Independence Day. But that's what this is a mourning. And I know you're going to talk about Trump's speech, but I mean to cap it off, you know,
even for those people who are really patriotic, to have Trump give a speech at Mount Rushmore, I mean, it shows how meaningless actually this day is. It's not about our independence. It's a mirror that we get to hold up and look back and reflect. It's kind of like when you have a birthday. For now when you pass all your significant, you know, younger adult birthdays and looking now, every day that you have a birthday now is a day of reflection. And Independence Day right now is a day of reflection to look back and think about how fucked up this country is, how we got here, and how it has been that way for generations, and how we need to own all that and move forward together.
Yeah. Thanks for that. The reflection paradigm distinction from celebration is really powerful. The somberness, the integrity of an honest assessment and reflection. I think the mix of the racism that's, you know, so gotten in, become manifested again, the COVID devastation in our country, the leadership dereliction, and Trump's intentionality of capitalizing and leveraging all of this, to me, just brings us to a place of like clear-eyed assessment about the stakes. And and I think that particularly that clear-eyed assessment has become far more present for white Americans. And I think that it's the battle for the soul of America that Joe Biden has been framing this election as from the beginning, is a battle that, to me, is being waged between white Americans and who are on their own, and white Americans who are in a coalition with with people of color, BIPOC people of color. Okay, and
yeah, so that's the difference. That's the difference between this, maybe this 4th of July and others, is that it was people of color who were screaming that Frederick Douglass speech at the bulk of white people, trying to get them to understand. And now it is it's what you're saying, and that is the major difference, and that's what gives me hope. And a bunch of us hope. Obama said it. Al Sharpton said it at George Floyd's funeral. A bunch of black leaders said it. This is different than the civil rights movement. It is what you're saying. It is the white people that know better and are doing better versus the ones who don't give a damn. Or maybe they do know, but they're fighting against this positive change. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and there's obviously a massive battle among white Americans with white Americans. But to me, my assessment, my feeling is that the majority in that struggle, I'm just among white Americans, the majority have moved firmly into a progressive camp. Okay? Not like three quarters majority, but a solid 60%, and they are highly educated. They are more women than men. They are people who live around other. They live in more diverse communities. They are trending that way in the same way that a state of Virginia is trending that way. They're trending that way, and so this is why Trump's faced with not only. Really, I think we're just very, even 3 years removed from 2016, or 3.5 years removed from 2016, the differences between where we were at in 2016 and where we're at in 2019, to me, or 2020, it just feels to me like there's a steeliness and a resolve and a determination, all forged in the midst of massive pain and terror that white Americans have now come to like stand side by side with people of color to say, okay, we get it. We understand. And we're fucking sorry, but we're here. Okay.
Yeah. People should take this advancement and kind of, you know, take it for what it is and kind of put it in their pocket for later, because there's a lot of folks that lose hope because they feel like change isn't happening fast enough or that it won't happen ever. And there have been now two moments in my lifetime of like my political awareness where this has happened fast, where change is like night and day, and it's over the course of a handful of years. And it's this moment that you just described now. And as you're talking, I was thinking about another moment. I remember when Barack Obama didn't come in out and supported gay marriage while he was running for office.
Uh-huh.
And it was 2 years later, 2 or 3 years later, that gay marriage was completely accepted. Not completely, but I mean, it was like night and day. It was not only was he in support of it, but the country was, and laws across this country passed in support of it within his first term.
Yeah, so,
within his first term, right?
It was right at the end of his first term. Yep, it was by the end of his first term. And Joe Biden actually is the one who kind of pushed him on that. All right. Biden has a mixed record on a whole bunch of things, but on that one, he was ahead of Obama on it. Yeah.
Sure. So people should remember that when they start to doubt. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and the change has to be firmed. It has to be solidified. And that's where someone like us, our organization comes in, is that there is attitudinal change. There is possibilities. And now it's up to us to like cement that so that we don't revert back. Okay. And you cement it politically by winning elections and putting people in office who are going to say, you know what, same-sex marriage is what I'm going to fight for in this Congress. Like we're going to do that. Okay.
This is what we talked about. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's not enough to feel and think this. We have to put people mm-hmm. in positions of leadership who will stand and say, we're not going back. We are not.
Yeah. So this goes from purpose to power, right?
It's not enough
to feel motivated or to have your mind changed. Now you have to go and you have to change laws. The power dynamic has to shift. In writing, can I get that in writing? that's what the power piece is. It's like I agree. I love it that you feel this way. This is awesome. Can we write a contract up real quick?
Exactly.
When you're not having a good day, I can still have my freedom.
Right.
Right. So that's the conversation that we had around the protests with internally with our staff, and I think we've had this conversation in and around the protests, but it is, you know, our part is to cement the progress that's made to make laws based on that the people in the streets are asking for. That's our side. We've been kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting for us to have our moment now. It's like the baton is passed. Okay, great. So we helped to reshape America's thinking on race. Now it's up to you all to go and make the change that you say you want to make.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, that's let's take this and now transition into Trump and what he had to say last night at Mount mm-hmm. Rushmore. This is where I find Trump to be clarifying, okay, that he's actually helpful to the enterprise that, that you and I and CP and other progressive organizations are working towards. He's helpful at this moment. Horrible setback for some time. But at this moment in time, he's not modulating. He's not like waffling. He's tripling down on his xenophobia and culture war and racism. And that helps us all to sustain the purpose and to say, like, it's essential that we win this presidency, that we have a Senate that appoints different judges. So in this respect, Trump just even 4 months ago, when COVID was about to arrive in the United States in a significant way, could have done something that would have actually been very damaging to the broader progressive enterprise. He could have moderated his positions on a variety of things and become a leader of all people and said, we're going to go through this devastation together, and but we're going to do it together. That's never been his message, right? Together. We could have done this together.
He could have been like he could have done like the politically correct, like the politically sound strategically thing to do, which is, listen, I know you don't care, but Trump, you should totally just say these things to get the public on your side. If you were a little more savvy, if he had some better advisors maybe or something, he could have shown up as a hero right now.
Right, or he could totally be a hero.
At least competent. At least competent. He could have taken off. He could have just listened to the science, and just done what as they said, or just enough, and the messaging could have been on, and people would have still trusted him and followed him.
Yes, totally. He didn't do that. I can see the speech in my mind because I've read so many presidential speeches. I can see the speech in my mind. The mind is something like, look, for 3 years, we have built this great economy and it's going to be destroyed. But we are capable of rebuilding it. And I, as president, am capable of growing and becoming a leader for all of us. I can do that. We must do this. And I know Americans, that I haven't always been your president, some of you, but today I want to say that I am everyone's president, and we will get through this together, and we will do the science, and we will share resources, and we will prioritize everybody, especially the most vulnerable among us. I mean, I can see the speech, okay?
Yeah, he could have said that and not even done what he's saying. He could have said that.
Right, exactly.
Like half. He could have done half the actions. He could have still paid his the bankers and the business folk that are his lobbyists and his friends. He could have still appointed judges. He could have done a bunch of dastardly things, and people would have still believed in him. He would have had enough following to win re-election.
Right, so he didn't do that. He doubled down on his vitriol, his anger, his narcissism.
What are you talking about last night?
I'm gonna take us to last night. But for the last three months, he hasn't done what I just said. He didn't do that. He instead turned it into an us versus them, people who wear masks versus those who don't, people who believe science versus those who don't, people who care about Black Lives Matter and people who don't, right? He turned it into that all the way through. And that to me, this isn't the best word, but is a gift to the body of work we're trying to do, because he made it, he made the distinctions. He made Joe Biden look tremendous, okay? And last night at Mount Rushmore, I think we kind of hit the apex of that trajectory for Trump. Like he went to, yeah.
Okay, so hold on. So set the stage for this, because I didn't digest any of it. I knew it was happening, and it's like the most ridiculous, you know, when you, I bet he asked if he could stand on the heads and like face out, and the camera is looking up at him, and he's standing on top of on top of the president's heads giving a speech. I bet he asked that. And to him, he's got like a microphone, like a rock star, and he's got the floodlights and stuff, and there's like fireworks behind him. I bet that was his initial ask. But that's not the setup, right? That's what I would have wanted. That's not the setup. Tell me about the what's the physical situation here?
So Mount Rushmore is in a canyon. That has either there naturally or was blasted out. And there's this huge granite mountain, and these four heads are up on the granite mountain. And at the other end of the canyon from the granite mountain is this really nice, slowly sweeping down amphitheater that has all these seats in it. And at the bottom of that amphitheater.
The back of the heads. Right? No.
Well, no, we're looking at the heads. We're looking at the heads here.
Got it.
If you're in the amphitheater. So if you're in the amphitheater, the stage is essentially the heads, but it's up on a mountain.
Oh, and yeah, we should note that the mountain they chose to blast the heads into was like a sacred Native American mountain, I think, right?
Yeah, the whole Black Hills is sacred to the Lakota, the Ogallala, the Sioux. Mm-hmm. They go by many different names. It's all sacred. I mean, like, it is the sacred ground, okay? It's the equivalent of Jerusalem, okay?
Right.
So, yes. So, we could do a whole other thing about the creation of Mount Rushmore. Totally. But, yes, okay? So he's at the bottom of the amphitheater, though, because the amphitheater slopes down and there's a stage down there. And then way up behind him, but these are massive. These things are massive, are these heads, the presidential heads. And the stage is all set up in all the red, white, and blue and the 4th of July paraphernalia. And everybody's packed in. They put chairs because the seats that are there, I think, are benches. But they put chairs in, and they, you know how when you're going to do a really big event with a lot of people in it, you zip tie the chairs to each other so that they don't get jostled and moved. All right.
Okay.
So they were zip tied together, which has a whole different meaning in a COVID environment. Okay. So the chairs are all zip tied with each other.
In that close proximity.
Yes. Then, you know, you got all these officials up on the stage and Trump, and there's a band dressed in patriotic gear, and they're playing, you know, Lee Greenwood and the Battle Hymn of the Republic and all these things. So it's as over the top as you can make it. All right.
It's
as over the top. Like Trump, he's never subtle. He does his town hall with Fox at the Lincoln Memorial. Okay. He does his 4th of July speech at Mount Rushmore. And I knew, given the trappings, the circumstances, the context of where he was at in this election and physically at Mount Rushmore, that this is one of those speeches that takes on a life of its own because it just has so much symbolism draped in it. It's to me, it's like the antithesis of Obama speaking at Selma in 2015 on the 50th anniversary of Selma marches. Okay, it's the antithesis of that. It just takes on
with the people. It's way up in the clouds, right?
Yeah, I'm one of the. I should have my face up on that mountain. That's what he's saying. I should have my face up on that mountain. And there was nothing subtle about what he said. It was a message about four white men who had led this country with all their flaws, but that they were great and that he, as a president in America now, stands as the modern equivalent of them.
Did he actually say that?
He told the story. He just told the story of each of them and then said, you know, we will never go back, and we will never walk away from their principles. We are the modern manifestation of them. They set us on this trajectory. We are who they set us out to be.
So hold on. So wait. When you hear that, is there a dog whistle in there? Like, is there a, or is it kind of surface level? They're great presidents. I'm a great president. You know, our forefathers, kind of classic interpretation, or is it? Yes, I'm a white supremacist, and also they were too. And so yeah. I am actually what they wanted. Do you understand what yes. I'm saying to you? I am what they wanted, not George Floyd people, BLM people.
Yes.
Is that
yes.
what you read? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I heard and I saw, and I'll give you a couple examples. So okay. His first of all, it was a we versus them all the way through. Mm-hmm. And the them were radical left wing mobs, anarchists. Mm-hmm. They were people trying to destroy America. In his words, they hate America. They want to end it. They want to end America. Okay. And so there was the we versus they. And anytime you set up a we versus they, and you're talking about internal to the country, you're usually setting it up on political lines. But Trump is not only on political lines. Trump is on racial lines. Okay. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, the we that he was referencing was a white American we. Then he took it further, though, and he talked about, and here's the dog whistle word or the megaphone word in Trump's vocabulary. He talked about our heritage. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
About the heritage.
Statues.
Yes.
Better statues, right? Okay.
Right. He talked about
that, but like, yeah.
Right. That they are trying to take down our heritage, our statues, our heroes, and obviously they are the radical people of color, protesters who are doing damage in the streets, are lawless in the streets, and they're trying to take down the heritage of us, which is, you know, white America, particularly conservative white America, particularly white supremacist conservative America.
Our statues?
Yeah, it was we and they, ours and them, all the way through. Mm-hmm. Like there was nothing in there about like there's some people that are doing this. It was very clear that like he was on one side and there were the people he was criticizing were on the other side. So if you look at some of the language in there, the hostility, the indoctrination, the hatred of, he said, these are bad, evil people. All right. And you're not talking about like Saddam Hussein here in Trump's in Bush's language about evil, where at least you're applying it to somebody who's mass murdered people or something. Okay. You know, you're talking about your fellow Americans who are fighting for the ideals that you supposedly are supposed to represent. And he definitively said they are trying to silence us. We will not be silenced. And that is like straight up kind of a white nationalist language. That they are trying to silence us. They are evil. They are damaging our heritage. I really thought the speech could have been straight, not from George Wallace, because it was actually Wallace didn't say it quite the same way, but David Duke used to say it that way. All right? Duke did. There's a great, I don't know if you know the podcast Slow Burn. Slow Burn started like 3 years ago. And it did a season going through Watergate. And then the second season it was about Clinton and the impeachment for him. And then the third year, it was about Tupac and Biggie and the battle and the struggle between them. And Slow Burn this year is about...
Did you listen to these podcasts?
I have. I've listened to all of the first 2 years, and I've listened to a couple episodes in the third year, and then I kind of stopped because I just felt like it felt a little too
fucking Biggie, and you're like, I need to have Charles talk me through this
I didn't know what was right. I didn't understand right
the context. I mean, this is like we're taking a pause from this really interesting conversation about Trump to acknowledge that David has become a podcast listener. I remember when we launched our previous podcast, and you were like, I don't listen to podcasts, okay? Why would I listen to it? And you gave me this whole reason behind why you didn't listen to podcasts. But now you're like in this season three of a podcast.
Well, it's actually a season four. And so now this year it's I paused. Sorry. I paused season three because I was like, I need to come back to this when I have like an interpreter. Okay.
Okay.
But it's all right. Season four is right now, and season four is about David Duke. Okay.
Okay.
And it's really, really interesting to watch the moves that Duke makes and the way that he talks when he begins to become a national icon in the late 1980s. And to me, it felt so much like that moment. But then it really crystallized for me. There was a speech in 1992 that Pat Buchanan gave at the Republican National Convention. Buchanan had run for the presidency. He had not won. George H.W. Bush had won. But Buchanan had been like number two, running from the far right. Buchanan was a culture warrior, strong against abortion, strong against same-sex relations, anti-feminist, really wanted to build a wall. He was the first to talk about building a wall between the United States and Mexico. And he gave a speech at the convention that has become known as the 1992. Okay. It's become known as the culture war speech. And if we were running a sophisticated podcast right now, we'd play a clip from it, right? We play a clip. But I do. I play clips of it in my American Demagogues lecture series. And sure. And it's so over the top and angry and hostile. And I felt like that's where Trump went last night. And here's the last thing I want to say about last night. So Trump believes all these terrible things. I believe that he believes all these terrible things. But last night he delivered it as a set speech. And that means that that's the speech that his campaign and he wrote for that event.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is the, like, here's the mission. He said, this is what this campaign is about.
Exactly. He read it straight off the teleprompter. There was no riffing. And as delivering of a speech, it was pretty good for him because it was just a speech. But it was clearly the message that they have decided. All right. And so to me, I was stunned, I was angered, and I was also fortified because I felt, all right, good. You're not gonna try to change your colors as a chameleon here the last 3 or 4 months. You're going down with the ship, and that allows us who are trying to get rid of that ship to point to it and to say, look, this is who he is all the way down.
Yeah, well, so, and then more broadly, this is what the system is. It's kind of like, you know, he crawled into the inner workings of the Republican Party, and the like good old boys club that runs this country, and then like started to like like they have their secret like sayings and their cults and their handshakes and their like playbook. Right. And then he's like, gets up on the, and he's like, the playbook is this. And they're like, holy shit, dude, what are you doing? This is what he's been doing. But he's like, you know, we hate these people and down with these people. And they're like, no, that's just what we say in private. And he's like, I'm telling everybody, this is what we're doing. And they're like, holy shit.
Yeah. He says, right. He says, don't let people vote. Right, he's like, don't let people vote.
Because we'll lose.
Right.
We'll lose. So that's, you know, when you say he's clarifying for our mission, and it's, you know, it very much like it makes it more, it simplifies it for CP, but for the country, it like, there's no game. There's no pretense. There's no veneer. This is America. This is truly America. And some of us have been screaming at the top of our lungs for generations, and now all of you see it, and it's confirmed every day by him. And he did it again at Mount Rushmore, and he's telling us that he's going to do it for the rest of this campaign. But the parts of America that you're talking about that are fighting each other. And within white America, it is clear to all of us who we are as a country now. To all of us, it is clear. Everyone's owning their part. And now it's, where do you actually stand? Because you can't pretend anymore. You can't say, I'm a part of this group that believes this because they're saying they believe these really good things. You know, you can't say I'm a Republican with like a clear head now. You have to say, I'm all in with Trump. And you can't do that anymore. You can't say, hey, listen, we're just about balanced budgets, or we're about small government, because that's not even true anymore. What is the truth here? He's saying the truth right now, and that's where the reckoning is actually happening within white America. Where do we stand? Where do I stand as a voter individually? Where do I stand with my money? If I've got it, where am I going to put it? It's not a game anymore. It's not a competition between these two equal sides. I now have to reckon with that myself. And this conversation is probably happening with people individually. It's happening within families. And it's happening within communities around this country. And folks are more and more choosing the right side, it looks like.
Yeah, I think that to use the Duke again, so I think that for many highly educated white Americans, and I'm certainly in that category, for many highly educated white Americans, there was the ability to believe wholeheartedly in the ideals of this country, and to accept that there were pockets of Americans who stood in hostility to that, but that they were not the majority. Okay, that they were not large enough to lead a person like me to change my life. All right. And now when the guy becomes president, and Duke, this is what makes Trump the first demagogue president. When the person gets elected as president, all of the pieces get pulled back. And the reality is that the power that is there that he can exert is real and widespread. And it's clarifying. It's well, that's great, David, talking to myself here. That's great, David, mm-hmm. that you have taught certain things and you have researched certain things and you've lived out as best you can your professional life, mentoring certain peoples. But really, this is like it. This is it. Okay. And so now what are you going to do? And there is this reckoning moment where you're like, you're looking in the mirror and you're looking at yourself. And it happens on both sides. It happens on the side that's pro-Trump, and it happens on the side that is hot, that is the Black Lives Matter, more progressive side. You look in the mirror and you just say, where do I come? Where do I stand? And that to me, in the long run, is the benefit of this horrible experience.
Let me ask you a personal question.
Sure.
So the way you couch a lot of this is like me and my experience now, like me as the person who's lived this life, largely like the adult you, right? Mm. And what you, the reckoning is kind of, you've been living your life in comfort. You kind of start your identity as somebody who's been within the university system, and how that's kind of not been active, and now you want to get active. But do you ever go further back? Do you go further back and say, this is a deeper reckoning? It's not just about my life as an adult, but also the place that I come from, the community that I used to belong to, the legacy of my family and generations before you. Like, do you go that far when you look in the mirror?
I have. I certainly do it in terms of where I'm from. I'm from Dearborn, Michigan, which is Henry Ford's hometown, and reflects a deep racism and anti-Semitism that Ford himself pursued and believed in. And it borders Detroit. Dearborn and Detroit share a border, and that history of that border is one that was policed. I use that word intentionally. That was policed by Dearborn police to make sure that Detroit, when Detroit became overwhelmingly a black city, that those folks didn't come into Dearborn. Okay. I, of course, personally, you know, that wasn't my story, but I was part of the community that was part of that story. Mm-hmm. And then over time, that city, Dearborn, transitioned into becoming the largest Arab American population, in America, in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so that is also part of my story, that's my high school experience right there, is that, mm-hmm. that time period. We're talking early 80s, tensions with Iran, large Arab American populations, including a Time magazine cover in one of those years in which there were two guys, Arab Americans from East Dearborn, who were on the front of Time magazine, pictured with guns. And it was like the Black Panther kind of scary moment, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And sure. So I certainly carry with that sense of reality, that sense of reality of like, that's like, I don't get to never not be that. Okay. That was there. Now, do I personally think back on the moments where I did or believed terrible things? I actually don't have many of those memories. Okay.
Just so the people listening don't. This is not like a David. Do you want to tell?
No. No, but I. But
it was more of a. It's like a family legacy or like a generational legacy kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's
quote unquote forefathers.
Well, the reason why I say that I don't personally have those is because that's usually the out that a white person uses, which is like, I didn't do anything.
Okay.
And so to me, the narrative is not even important. Like, I'm not important in that, like, the actions I took are not important. It's that I stand in a jet stream of history, and I am representative of a people in the same way that you speak about the importance of legacy for you in terms of your father this or your community this. I have my own legacies, and my job is to make them, as far as I can see it, my job is to change those. All right. And it's never fundamentally about me. So it's really about the jet streams that I stand in. And so I stand in the jet stream of Dearborn. I stand in the jet stream of a highly educated white American. I stand in all of those. And so when I reference myself in these kind of communicative moments, it's because I'm trying to make the point. I'm trying, and I've made the point to myself many times, and I'm trying to share it with others, that it really doesn't matter what you personally think. You are part of a larger story, okay? And so you don't, do we not think that there were people who fought in wars who didn't agree with the war, but nonetheless contributed to it? They fought nonetheless. It doesn't matter what you think. It's like, what are you going to do? All right. So when I see Trump being Trump and I see it so explicit to me, it's prompted people who before could say it's enough to think, feel, or believe something different, and I don't need to act, to actually say, no, it's not enough to think, feel, or believe anything. What's important is action.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. Good. Hey, man, this is a hell of a 4th of July conversation.
It should be, right? It should be, man. There's no, I mean, we can laugh and we need to laugh. Like, I wonder, like, what kind of coffee you're having and all of that. And the moment, like I'm 53 years old, man. I know I have people who have passed away before me at my age. I have no guarantees. Like, every day, every 24 hours is like it. I just don't know. And you, you know, a dad of three and ascending into kind of this new civic space for you and taking on these leadership roles in so many ways with Common Purpose and really coming to the apex of stuff that you've been doing for many years. Like, you got so much you're going to accomplish. We need to be clear-eyed about this, right? Totally clear-eyed and determined, and to say, yeah, fuck Trump, fuck all this. And you know, come 2028, when we're two presidential elections out from now, we damn well better be at a better place.
Yeah, we must. All right, we will. I'll drink to that. I'll drink my day old coffee that I warmed in the microwave to that.
What's the little snaps I've been hearing in the background? It's like you're turning on a gas stove and there's like a little spark to it. That's what it sounded like.
Oh, you're hearing snaps in the background?
I don't know. Are those my knees popping? I don't know.
That was again right there.
My old joints. I think it's old joints popping. Hey, I'm like 2 years to 40 now.
Is that what year were you born? Let's get this nailed down right now. What year were you born? Because we're never sure exactly.
82.
March of 82. So you are 38.
Uh-huh, for sure. I'm 100% that I'm 38 years old. This is a running joke because for everyone listening, for 6 months, I'm fully believing that I was this age. Told David that I told you I was 36. I think I told you I was 36 and I was actually 30. See, I don't remember how old I actually was when I told you. I met you 2 years ago. I think I told you 1 year off. I don't know. And then it wasn't until you were talking to my wife and she was like, no, he's not. And I'm like, oh,
yeah, but it was the funniest thing to me.
I know. I'm old enough to not give a damn about how old I am. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm old enough to be looking externally.
Sure.
What is going on in this world, in this country? You know, and at the same time that, you know, I don't know how much longer I got, you know, it starts to, like, this world is on fire. This country should be helping to put it out, and we're stoking the flames, and yet you and I both believe, and the folks on our team, our community, and other folks working across the country believe that we can set it straight. We really, really believe it. We really have believe it. It's not just us.
It's crazy shit, man. But yeah, we really do. Like, yes, so like people look at us like, really? Do you really believe that? Yeah.
There's so many people working towards fixing this shit. We are like in lockstep with them. I wish I wish that some of the conversations that we had, we could just record them or do like the podcast and then just have these conversations with partner orgs and stuff. We're making so much change and hey, this thing's looking up and this is really great. And you know, so people could feel it, but they gotta settle for these conversations and they gotta trust. They gotta just believe.
Yep. All right, man, let's go have have a good 4th of July and get back to work.
Yeah, I'm actually probably gonna work a little bit too.
Me too. Yes.
And then we're gonna have some family time. Think about this country, and get back to it.
Totally. I'm gonna work on our map. The map we're talking about. The kind of like prioritization. So I wanna give some thought today to specifically the states, like what states fall where in our prioritization. So looking forward to that.
Yep. Yeah. There you go. That sounds like fun. Here you go. We are such. It sounds like fun. Let's work on a map. That's what you're in for, folks. You want to roll with us? We're gonna build a really fun map. Okay.
Yeah, and you're going to be on the website. You're going to be like, yeah, I'm fixing the website. All right.
This is great. Look at these colors. It's really cool.
Sure.
Okay, man.
Okay. Thanks, man. Yeah, talk to you later. Bye.
Take care.